Sing to Yahweh a new song. Sing to Yahweh all the earth. Sing to Yahweh, bless his name. Tell of his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous works among all the peoples. For great is Yahweh, and greatly to be praised. He is to be revered above all gods. For all the gods of the peoples are idols. But Yahweh, he's made the heavens. Honor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. So give to Yahweh, O families of the people. Give to Yahweh glory and strength. Give to Yahweh the glory due his name. Bring gifts, enter his courtyards. Bow down to Yahweh in holy splendor. Tremble before him, all of the earth. Tell the nations, Yahweh rules. Yes, the world is firmly established. It shall not be tottered. He will judge the peoples with equity. Let the heavens be glad and let the earth rejoice. Let the sea roar and all that fills it. Let the fields exult and everything in it. Then shall all the trees of the forest sing for glory before Yahweh, for he is coming. He is coming to judge the earth. He will judge the world with righteousness and the people with truth. The word of the Lord. It's not immediately apparent, but enthronement psalms are for people experiencing the breakdown of the world. They are for people experiencing disorder. They're for people experiencing doubt and uncertainty. So this type of psalm just might be ripe for some of you. The name enthronement is a bit of a misnomer because there's no throne ever described in these psalms. But God is described as being robed in power and majesty and glory. And we get a description of what happens when God sits on the throne. And the purpose of placing God on the throne in this context is to deny power and authority and control of everything that brings that sense of disorder and chaos and breakdown and disintegration and doubt and uncertainty. And everything that makes the world seem to totter and feel unfirm. It's not immediately apparent in Psalm 96 because there's no reference to the old song. That's old news. There's no reason to tarry there. It's simply the celebration of a new song. It is a celebration of a new order, a new king, a new reality, a new counterworldliness. And the psalm offers a drastic reorientation to our world that places hope over despair, that places meaning over nihilism, that places order over chaos. We need songs like these. In the last 10 years or so, I've started seeing a poster that I'd never seen before. And I had no clue what it meant, and I just didn't really like it and ignored it. The poster says, "Keep calm and carry on." The words are printed under the Tudor crown representing the British monarchy. If you haven't seen it, there's a copy of it in the bulletin under the sermon title. And the poster seemed silly to me. Also, who are you to tell me to keep calm? And it's bad advice. I've never effectively told someone to stay calm. It doesn't work. But I recently learned the origin story of the poster. It's a remake of a poster from 1939. 2.5 million of these posters were made. Only two boxes survived. About 10 years ago, an English bookseller found this poster in the bottom of a box. And on it was printed these words, and he didn't really know what it meant either, but he just liked it. You know, he thought it was kind of clever. So he framed it and put it in the window of his bookstore. And he did some research on that poster. And it turns out it was from when Eastern Europe was under siege. It seemed like the world was unraveling. London and Coventry and Liverpool were all being bombed by German planes. And there was trauma and air raid sirens, and people were sheltering in place. There were explosions. The world was breaking down, coming undone. The foundations were shaking. The British government anticipated the invasion of Nazi Germany and printed these posters for the occasion. The invasion did not happen, and the posters were destroyed instead of distributed. The poster was intended to be an assurance to those who felt that the world was quickly unraveling. The use of the crown suggested that you could trust the providence and resilience of the kingdom. The bookseller's wife commented, "Its message was so simple and so clear and without spin. Keep calm and carry on. Has turned out to have a meaning not just for a single people in a time of trouble, but for all of us, wherever we live, whatever our troubles." Ancient Israel didn't have a ministry of information that was in charge of printing posters, but they had these psalms, and they worshiped God. And here's what we think they did. Each year around the New Year festival, people would gather at the temple and dethrone Yahweh again for a new year. And this carried implications about the renewal of creation. It brought an assurance of well-being to the people. It brought a sense of stability for people whose world seemed to totter. And over again, we hear in these Psalms, "The Lord is King," or more precisely, "Yahweh kings," or "Yahweh rules," or "Yahweh reigns." So the message of these Psalms is not quite keep calm and carry on, though they respond to the same urgent need. Rather, the words printed under the crown say, "Yahweh reigns." And Christians have another way of saying that. Jesus is Lord. Sometimes these statements feel foolhardy, especially when it seems like there is nothing going correctly in the world. They don't always feel quite right. And sometimes saying that God rules feels more aspirational than anything else. That's okay. And that just may be the point of these Psalms. The rule of God seems to secure order and justice and well-being of the earth. And the psalm then serves as a liturgy. It's a type of prayer service for the New Year festival. And what we often do in worship is we invite the community to perform a new way of being, a counter-worldliness, the through spoken words and gestures and rituals. Something about God's future becomes momentarily present, even in the face of the old. The psalm serves as a liturgy to dismantle that oldness and then invites us to sing a new song. The psalm would sort of serve like your bulletin does for today's service. So Psalm 96 has two call to worships. In verses 1 through 3, we hear the exhortation to sing a new song. And the reason we're given to sing a new song is simple. Yahweh is great and to be revered over all other gods. And God turns all other gods into idols. And God even made the heavens himself. And that's what I find fascinating about this psalm. Parts of the Bible are written before the development of a kind of belief in one God. So in the ancient world, sometimes we hear stories of competing gods, whose sovereignty is limited to one sphere or another. And this psalm insists that God empties all the other gods of their power. He turns them into idols, as if they no longer exist. They no longer have any power or authority over you. And that's why the enthronement psalms emphasize the seas, because not everyone was sure Yahweh created the seas. They might be under control of another god. The floods are raised up. They've raised up their voices. The floods are in a roar, says Psalm 93. Psalm 95 makes an interesting observation in describing the peaks and the mountains, and the giving glory to God. They go out of their way to mention that the seas were created by God. The sea is God's, for God made it. It's a profound statement in these psalms, that God is over the other gods. Psalm 96 really brings it home. Let the seas roar and everything in them. In other words, Yahweh tames the chaos. Bring it on. There's no place that the reign of God doesn't touch. The chaos cannot win. And in Christian terms, we might say that the lordship of Jesus Christ has power over sin and death. And now that Yahweh rules, nothing can hurt us. Now that God rules, keep calm and carry on. And then we get to verses 7 and 9, and we get a second call to worship. This time calling all the families of the earth. They are to give glory and strength to God. They are to bring offerings and enter courtyards and bow down. So if the first call to worship is about God being over other gods, the second call to worship is about God being over all nations. Among the nations, say it, the Lord is king. The world is firmly established. It shall not be moved. He will judge the peoples with equity. So this time it's followed by a declaration that God is over all nations and Yahweh's reign is not limited to any nation or tribe. This mattered to the people at the temple because enthroning a sense of a tribal national God over all other gods was an act of defiance. When their monarchy fell apart, they could still trust that God reigned. When the Assyrians decimated their holy places and replaced them with their own shrines, well, then just remember, Yahweh is not just over God, over other gods, Yahweh's over other nations. Or when the Babylonians came and destroyed the temple, well, God still reigns, even in exile. It's hard to know at what point in this narrative these psalms were written, but nonetheless, the world was feeling wicked and cruel. They wanted the stabilizing force of God on the throne. So the psalm ends with what that might look like. It ends with a celebration of the entire creation. Let the heavens be glad, the earth rejoice. Let the sea roar, all that fills it. Let the fields exult and everything in it. Then shall all the trees of the forest sing for joy before the Lord, for he is coming to judge the earth. Now that God is enthroned, the whole creation rejoices. The whole creation is renewed. You are realigned to the good news of God's reign. The new year is God's year. So the worshiping community then departs with a new assurance about the world and are compelled to live it out and lean into God's promise each passing day. Keep calm and carry on. It's not an invitation to complacent living. It's a rebuke of the chaos that tries to unravel the world around you. Don't put power and authority and trust into anything else. Because God reigns over all other gods. God reigns over all other nations. Several years ago, I was invited to lead a Bible study at a nursing home. And there I met a woman who had never grown up in the church, and she had just recently taken interest in Christian imagery and symbols. It was an education to watch her engage words and phrases that we often take for granted with newness and curiosity. She was a little younger than the rest of the folks there, But she had so much life experience that she just shared in our short little time together. Or she was just a really good storyteller during introductions. And it was just around Christmas time. And I was told that it would be helpful to build the Bible study around a popular Christmas hymn. This would be helpful, I was told, because a lot of the residents had memory issues, and they could still recall some of the words to these old psalms. So that would probably be the best way to get people engaged. So I picked Joy to the World, which, by the way, we came within inches of singing today. There's an alternate tune, number 266, if you're interested, that we decided wasn't very singable. But Joy to the World wasn't written as a Christmas hymn. It was the first one of the paraphrases of Psalm, one of these enthronement psalms. So we started reading these psalms, 93 and 96 and 98. And as soon as someone read aloud, "The Lord is King," the woman slammed her Bible shut. She said, "Well, that's all I need to hear. That's enough." And she started to get up as if she were to leave. And I looked at her a little stunned and said, "Why is that? Tell me more." And she said, "If God rules, there is nothing to fear." And I looked at her. And something changed about her disposition. I thought about it, and I realized what it was. She was inhabiting a whole new world. She was singing a new song.